Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Today on Edgewise, we're very excited to have the best-selling author Tom Rath with us. Rath has been with the Gallup organization for 14 years and leads Gallup's workplace research and leadership consulting all around the world. Rath also serves on the board of VHL.org, an organization dedicated to cancer research and patient support. He's earned degrees from the University of Michigan and the University of Pennsylvania. He's the author of numerous books, including How Full Is Your Bucket? And a New York Times bestseller, StrengthsFinder 2.0, which is a long-running number one Wall Street Journal bestseller. And today we have another book he's written, Well-Being, The Five Essential Elements. His co-author is Jim Harder, also from Gallup. Tom, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, why should people care about this book?
Both Jim and I spend most of our time helping organizations and leaders in particular to think about what's most important for their employees, their customers, and their shareholders in order to drive business growth in a positive way. When we look at some of the most important elements, we found a lot of things like employee engagement, focusing on employee strengths, and now quite a bit of work about well-being. And we've learned that it's not only important for each of us as individuals when we think about the way we lead our lives on a day-to-day basis, but it's also critical, even if you're thinking about the best economic interests of the organization, in terms of the way higher well-being drives down costs and increases productivity.
So there's an organizational side to this book.
What we're seeing is that in the future, and there are already a lot of organizations moving in this direction, most organizations won't have much choice but to get involved in and care about their employees' well-being, especially in the United States, where employers shoulder most of the burden for healthcare costs. It's actually in the organization's best interest to help employees lead better lives, even if you just look at it from a profit standpoint.
What's the role of managers? Could you cite some specifics that would contribute to better organizational well-being?
Sure. One of the most interesting findings from Gallup's work about employee engagement is we've asked more than 15 million employees worldwide now, does your manager or supervisor care about you as a person? And what we found is when employees feel that their manager truly cares about what's going on in their lives, not just as a means to an end, but seeing the employees' lives as an end in itself, that translates into higher productivity, reductions in turnover, better safety rates, and a host of positive workplace outcomes. The best managers and leaders understand that they need to be in the business of developing people first, and the products and services and offerings will come from that.
And you also approach the subject of measurement. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
One of the things that organizations are already starting to do is systemically help all of their employees manage and measure their well-being every 6 or 12 months for the sake of being able to know where they stand today and how they can improve on that as time goes by. One of the big challenges we found when we surveyed people in 150 countries around the world is when you ask people what is top of mind relative to their well-being, they talk about health and wealth. But when we dig deeper beneath the surface, we see that having a meaningful career and social relationships and a lot of other factors are at play, yet we don't have a way to measure those. So perhaps the largest part of the project that Jim Harder and I had been working on with our researchers at Gallup was to put together a very broad assessment to help both individuals and organizations quantify the impact of well-being in each of those areas.
Tom, didn't Gallup come up with the 12-point scale that determined engagement? Would that be a factor also for consideration in terms of organizational well-being?
Yes, it's the same teams of scientists at Gallup that have been working on the well-being assessment instrument that built the 12 questions about employee engagement. What we're seeing is engagement is about what the individual brings to the workplace each day and what are some of the elements you need to have taking place on the job within a given work team. What we're seeing with well-being is it's a much broader construct where it's not only about what the organization's doing to engage the individual in their career, but also what's the impact of my working for a given organization on my physical health and my involvement in the community and my finances and a host of wider factors.
Okay, we've covered some of the business issues. Well, let's talk about the broader picture. Your book is called Well-Being, The Five Essential Elements. What are these elements?
Yeah, what was interesting is we started off with a huge wealth of data at our disposal because Gallup had been conducting since 2005 world polls in those 150 countries where we have interviewers going door to door in 60% of those nations based on random samplings and asking people about what's going on in their lives, do they feel safe, what's most important. So we were in a unique position to look at what are the most common human needs that cut across countries and faiths and cultures. We identified five core elements that hold up across all those groups we've studied.
Right. Now, can you talk a little bit about those?
The first one was what we called career well-being. And so even if you're a student or a stay-at-home dad or mom or a retiree, that's the meaning and purpose you get from what you do every day. The second factor we found is social well-being. We all know that relationships are important, but there's a lot of emerging research explaining how relationships create social change within organizations. So our relationships are not just important in the social circles that surround us, but scientists are discovering that changes such as becoming healthier or getting more engaged in your job move through organizations one social network at a time. The third element we found is one that you might expect, financial well-being. It's not necessarily the raw amount of income you make in a year, your net worth. What's most important is that overall sense of financial security and how you spend your money. If you spend your money wisely, that can boost your well-being. Just buying things for yourself doesn't work so well. The fourth element we found was physical well-being, and that gets back to diet and exercise and one of the more undervalued elements of sleep. We conducted extensive studies about the value of sleep in terms of our physical health and well-being on a day-to-day basis. And then the fifth element is community well-being, and that ranges from simply feeling safe, walking at night within a mile of your house and having clean air and water and shelter at the basic level, all the way up to the very top of the community well-being continuum, where we found your contributions in terms of what you give back to society to be the most important element that differentiates a life that's pretty good from one that's excellent.
So all five of them have to come together for someone to feel truly happy.
The good news is about 60% of people we studied are thriving or have a real high level in at least one of those five elements. So they have a good place to start. But only 7% are at a level of thriving in all five. And what we've discovered as we look deeper into the research is as you move to that level of thriving in each additional element, it leads to healthier days. So you're homesick from work less often and you have a lot more positive energy each day. And it increases a host of health outcomes that we've looked at as well.
So Tom, part of the issue in social well-being is the subject of friendship and working with friends and how good people feel about where they're working. Now, some of these factors would also influence overall organizational well-being, don't you think?
That's been one of the most critical findings from all of our engagement research. One of the questions we've asked of those 15 million is, do you have a best friend at work? And it sounds counterintuitive sometimes when an executive hears Gallup recommend that you need to have best friends at work. And obviously, you can't just go tell people to have best friends at work. What organizations can do is create the right environment. And when they do so, what we find is that people who have a best friend at work are 7 times as likely to be engaged in their jobs. When people don't have a best friend at work, their odds of being engaged are just 1 in 12. It's a pretty lonely place to be if you show up at work and nobody even asks you how your weekend was.
And are there some recommendations you might offer to improve in each of these five elements?
Sure. The most basic one in terms of career well-being is to find something that you have a lot of passion for that also fits your strengths. If you can at least have an opportunity to do something that you feel you're doing at your best each day, that's one of the best predictors of what separates a good day from a bad day. In terms of social well-being, what we've found is that as long as people have at least 3 or 4 real close connections and relationships, that makes a difference. And it's also important to think about the fact that we essentially have stock in others' well-being. Even if I don't know someone that's a friend of a friend, their happiness has a direct impact on me when we look at the numbers and also has an impact on the likelihood of whether I'll smoke or my physical health as well. So it's important to think about your whole social network. In terms of financial well-being, one of the best learnings for me in that area is that spending on experiences is a pretty good idea. We often think if we're not feeling very good, you can buy yourself out of a rut with retail therapy. That doesn't work. That actually leads you to spend more and takes your well-being downhill. But when you spend on experiential purchases, whether that's a long vacation or just taking a grandkid out to a movie or going out to dinner with friends, that gives you the value of looking forward to it in advance, the experience itself, and then also the memories, of course. In terms of physical well-being, one interesting learning is that if we're able to get a sound night's sleep, usually somewhere between 7 and 9 hours, not only does that provide a reset, so no matter how grumpy we are the night before, we start above average the next day, but the research is also revealing that we learn more effectively based on what we've absorbed the day before if we get a sound night's sleep. So we're learning more and more about the value of each additional hour of sleep. And then when we look at community well-being, one of the things we're seeing is that's a place where organizations are doing a much better job today than the other four elements, pulling together programs and opportunities that get employees involved in the local communities that surround the organization. It is important for companies to continue that outreach because in addition to getting employees more involved, it sends a statement about what the company values that appears to be pretty powerful in the recruiting process as well.
Now, in the book, you offer some positive defaults. Can you explain this concept to us?
So often our short-term interests jump between what we're doing on a day-to-day basis and our own long-term interests. An example would be, we ask people on one of our Gallup polls if they regularly purchased hard candy, and only 7% said yes. But then later on in the same questionnaire, we asked the same group of 1,000 people if there were a bowl of hard candy sitting in front of them, if they'd take a handful, 70% said yes. So many times we work against ourselves and our own long-term interests, but what we learn from people with real high well-being is that they've figured out how to profit from their short-term desires by understanding that, for example, if you work out for even 20 minutes in the morning, that will boost your mood for the next 3, 6, and 12 hours. You do it for the short-term mood boost, not because you know it might prevent heart disease 30 years down the road.
In the book, you have this concept of buy experiences, B-U-Y experiences. What do you mean by buy experiences?
That gets back to spending money on things that create emotional value for yourself and others, such as a vacation. One real practical example, I was planning my honeymoon many years ago and had thought the whole time I'd keep it as a surprise and let my wife know at the last minute, and then started reading some of this good research that suggested you get more emotional boost and well-being and value out of all the anticipation and looking forward to it in the 6 months preceding a long vacation. Went ahead and told her quite a bit ahead of time, and it was fun for me. A few months later, I walked in one day and I saw her checking out the website of the place where we were going and could tell she's looking forward to it. You can see how it's actually possible to measure the utility you get beforehand. And then, of course, you've got decades of fond memories.
All right. But can we measure it as well in the 9-to-5 kind of environment?
Over the last few years, we've clearly been able to measure and manage and quantify well-being. We've looked at it on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, and then even down to the hourly momentary experience to see what happens. We had one experiment where we asked workers to wear small devices that pinged them 15 times throughout the day. They also had heart rate monitors on, and we collected cortisol samples to test their physiological stress levels at those moments. We were trying to figure out, what does the average experience between 9 and 5 look like for workers in the United States? What we learned is there's a huge difference there in terms of how engaged you are in your job and your overall career well-being, where if you're not very engaged in what you're doing, you start the day off pretty high and just continue to cascade downhill until about 3 or 4 o'clock when your experiences start to pick up for no other reason than you know you're about to get out of work. When people are engaged in their jobs on a day-to-day basis, when we ask them who they're with, what they're doing, how much fun they're having every hour, every 30 minutes, we see that they have about as much enjoyment and fun and interest throughout the workday as they do on an evening or weekend. One of the big values of thinking about well-being in the workplace and engagement is that it simply smooths out that curve. So instead of dreading the time you're at work, which is the majority of the time we spend in any one activity based on our time use, you can have just as good a time as you do on weekends.
So what you're saying is you can attitudinally adjust the way you feel about work if you just think about it the right way.
Yes, you can adjust the way you think about work. And one other learning is even small adjustments make a real difference. An extra 30 minutes of sleep, an extra 20 minutes of exercise, each additional hour and half hour of social time makes a profound difference. We don't think about the number of hours we spend with others during a given day, but if you start with no social time in a day, you have about as many happy moments as negative moments on a given day. If you go to 1 hour social time, you get up to 2 or 3 to 1, happy moments to stressful ones. And then when you get all the way out to 5 or 6 hours, which is what people who are thriving in their life average, if you count all your social time at work, away from work, with family, text messaging, on the phone, you have 12 times as many happy moments as stressful moments in a day. And it sounded like a lot of social time to Jim Hart and me when we were both introverted researchers working on this book. But even when we went back and looked at different personality types, we had that information in our database, we found that you do need about 5 hours of good social time a day in order to have a great day.
That's an interesting point. Personality differences don't affect this.
We've studied personality extensively at Gallup and have an assessment called StrengthsFinder we use to examine that across these millions of people. And even when we look at the most introverted personality types within StrengthsFinder themes, you still need at least 5.25 hours per day to be at that ratio. So there's not as much variance as you'd expect based on personality types.
Tom, do you have any concluding thoughts you want to leave our audience with?
In wrapping up, one of the big challenges for any manager and leader over the next decade will be to help employees understand how the organization is working to improve the overall well-being of the employees and individual and of the families that surround that organization as well, because it will create an entirely different value proposition for employees to join your organization and to stay with your organization. The big challenge for organizations will be, and they can do this, how do you prove that if I join your organization tomorrow, I'll have better relationships with my friends and family members, I'll be more engaged in my career, I'll know how to manage my finances better, I'll be healthier physiologically, and I'll be more involved in the community because I work for your organization instead of going to work by myself or going to work for a competitor. It really changes the equation in terms of the way we evaluate what jobs in the future are in the best interest of ourselves and our families.
So it would also influence the way you present a job and so a way to retain top talent.
Our research would suggest that that message will be much more effective than increases in compensation.
We've been very happy to have as our guest on today's Edgewise, Tom Rath. Tom's new book is entitled Well-Being, The Five Essential Elements. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Dave.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.